David Brinkley is on assignment. I'm Chet Huntley, NBC News. The North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong today came within 25 miles of Phnom Penh, the capital of Cambodia. They blew up a bridge and encircled a town on Highway 2 south of Phnom Penh. But 25 miles south of that, the South Vietnamese, with 10,000 men and 200 American advisors, drove a column into the province capital of Takeo. Until yesterday, the capital was also threatened from another direction, from Kampong Cham to the northeast, which was in enemy hands.
The Vietnamese communists launched their boldest attack of the Cambodian war against Cambodia's second largest city, Kampong Cham. Kampong Cham is a key road and river junction on the Mekong north of Phnom Penh. Small groups of Vietnamese communists slipped inside the city almost before the defenders were aware what had happened. Cambodian Air Force T-28s dive-bombed the city in a vain effort to dislodge the invaders. A trickle of refugees fled the burning city with what belongings they could salvage. The Cambodian army sent up reinforcements to Kampong Cham after the town had fallen to the communists. On the road from Phnom Penh, they rumbled up slowly, led by overage French armored cars, and then Cambodian troops in old passenger buses, soft drink trucks, any other kind of transport that could be commandeered from civilian or other government uses. The troops were very much quieter than they'd been when they were coming back from the Nak Lung ferry crossing the other day. This time they're aware that they're facing a major battle, and perhaps the most important difference, they will not have American or South Vietnamese troops to clear the way for them. This time the Cambodians will be very much on their own. This is Wells Hangen, NBC News, on the road between Phnom Penh and Kampong Cham in Cambodia.
Yesterday, Cambodian troops reoccupied Kampong Cham, driving the enemy out into the countryside. The Cambodian campaign occupied the attention of the Senate fully today. Minority Leader Hugh Scott said President Nixon is keeping his promise to get out of that country by June 30th. The Senate Foreign Relations Committee also dealt with the Indochina situation.
Yesterday, the South Vietnamese disclosed that their troops had been making brief forays into Laos for some time, and today the Pentagon disclosed that American advisors had been crossing the border with them. Defense Secretary Melvin Laird told a Senate committee this afternoon that these border crossings do not violate the congressional prohibition against the use of American ground forces in Laos.
A force engaged in combat in that area or carrying on an operation along the border area quite possibly could have crossed the border when they have been engaged in combat. It is necessary from time to time as far as the South Vietnamese are concerned to pursue that policy. Their mission is not a ground combat mission or a search and destroy mission or anything like that. Their mission is in connection with either the running battle which is being carried on at a particular time or in connection with the air interdiction campaign or in connection with rescue missions that may be carried on the Ho Chi Minh Trail. There have been no changes as far as the rules of engagement on the Laotian border. Certainly have been no changes for the last 6 or 8 months.
Nevertheless, the use of Americans on the ground in Laos, however limited, is likely to heat up the Senate debate on resolutions to curb and to end the war. Some supporters of the White House are talking about a very lengthy debate on these resolutions. NBC News correspondent Paul Duke talked to one of them, Senator Bob Dole.
Are you suggesting a filibuster?
Well, I wouldn't call it that. I think maybe taking a page from some of the Democrats who opposed Carswell and Hainsworth, I might refer to it as extended debate. This is a very momentous issue. It's very important. It involves the executive branch and the legislative branch. I don't think we should in any way tie the hands of the president. It may be necessary to discuss an issue of this importance for 2 or 3 or 4 weeks.
Secretary Laird affirmed again today that whatever happens, all of the American ground troops will be out of Cambodia by June 30th.
The United States backed a call by 11 Asian nations for an Indochina peace conference. Newsweek magazine today published what it called a cable from Defense Secretary Laird to General Abrams, the American commander in Vietnam. It said the public would be impressed if the military could say that it had taken high-ranking prisoners in Cambodia or captured major enemy headquarters and supplies. The Pentagon said it did not know if Abrams had received any such message, but that no one in the Pentagon had either signed or sent any such thing. The magazine also said that 2 Gallup telephone polls it commissioned showed this. Half the people questioned backed the president in Cambodia. The other polls said 65% of those questioned are either very satisfied or fairly satisfied with Mr. Nixon's record.
I think this is just one of many evidences that the basic American people are still strongly behind the president in how he's conducting himself, not only in terms of seeking to get us out of Vietnam honorably, but also in terms of other aspects of his office.
I'd be interested in knowing if any of the statements that have been made by Vice President Agnew have had a calming effect on this country since the president's call for reason and rationale.
I think that too much emphasis has been placed on saying that the vice president has stirred up the rhetoric. As a matter of fact, I think that the major hotness in the rhetoric in the past few weeks has come from speakers I heard on the ellipse below the White House speaking to the students. Sometimes from newspapers, for example, I saw a headline in a newspaper yesterday which said, the government is a crude liar. And then went on to document something in 1967. I don't think this kind of thing helps in working with students to get them to work within the establishment and to work with government itself.
I think it's a double standard here. Whenever those who violently dissent or violently disagree with the president make intemperate statements, it's called honest dissent. When a spokesman of the administration states something in strong terms, they're accused of polarizing the American people and dividing them into 2 camps, and I don't buy this. I think that those who support the administration have been much more temperate and much more rational in what they've said than those who oppose the president.
Arthur Burns, chairman of the Federal Reserve, today told the American Bankers Association that Congress could take major action against inflation by holding down government spending. Andrew Brimmer, a member of the board, told the bankers that the government probably will have to borrow about $11 billion this year, double last year's amount. And that, he said, will make tight money even tighter. One indication that inflation is not about to let up came today when the Teamsters Union and the Labor Department announced that the union had approved a new contract that will pay the men $1.10 more an hour, or at least $5,000 a man in the next 39 months.
The Huntley Brinkley Report is produced by NBC News and brought to you in color.
Do 2 bikes cost money?
Did not, did so.
My mother got it from me with S&H Green Stamp.
You can't, you need money.
Can too, wait and see.
That's the bike?
That's it.
No money,
just S&H Green Stamps.
Mommy says so.
Boy, wow.
That's right. No money, just S&H Green Stamps. S&H Green Stamps. The more you lick 'em, the more you like 'em.
I'm Roy Chapin, chairman of the board of American Motors. Money's tight now, but at American Motors, stretching the dollar is something we've always done. The Hornet, for example, is America's lowest-priced compact car, yet it offers standard features and optional extras you wouldn't expect on a compact. We think our Javelin gives you more value than any other sporty car. Our Ambassador is the only car line in its class with air conditioning as standard equipment. Our Rebel station wagon not only gives you more room than any wagon in its class, it has a lower price than any wagon made in America. Our AMX is America's lowest-priced two-seater sports car. And to maintain our leadership in the economy car field, we're introducing the Gremlin. It's priced to compete with the little imports well below any other U.S. car. I believe in these cars. I can't believe that people enjoy paying more for a car than they have to.
President Nixon headed back to Washington today from Key Biscayne. He meets tomorrow morning with his cabinet and in the afternoon with his Urban Affairs Council. And a good deal of his time will be taken up with black disillusionment. Yesterday, the president of Howard University, Dr. James Cheek, said again it is urgent the president meet with black educators. And today, Representative William Clay, speaking for the Black Caucus in the House of Representatives, said they have tried for 3 months in vain to see the president on the racial crisis. And he said Mr. Nixon has created an alienation as deep as it is dangerous. Attorney General Mitchell flew to Jackson, Mississippi today, where two young Negroes were killed by highway patrolmen last week in front of Jackson State College. Yesterday, a memorial service was held for the two.
At two separate rallies, there was talk of revenge and meeting violence with violence. Even Mississippi civil rights leader Charles Evers, a strong advocate of nonviolence, said the shooting of the students had caused him to question his faith in nonviolence.
As much as I love nonviolence, and as much as I speak out for it, there come a time you wonder if it really pays. But I ask you again, we have no choice, because until the country itself, the we blacks and the whites who believe we believe, join together and destroy those who are destroying us, we ain't gonna never be safe. And these streets in Jackson and in Mississippi and throughout this country ain't safe for no black man. And they ain't safe for no white man who believe in justice and equality.
After the rallies, about 1,500 blacks and a few whites marched down Lynch Street to Jackson State College and the dormitory where police fired on students last week. Students raised their fists in the Black Power salute, and the people knelt for prayer on the lawn of the bullet-ridden dormitory. The rallies and the march were peaceful. The police stood by and did not interfere. Today, Attorney General John Mitchell arrived in the tense Mississippi Capitol, accompanied by his wife Martha and their young daughter. Mitchell said the police shooting of black students here may well be the most serious incident of this type so far. He said, "I am determined to see what we in the federal government can do about the situation directly and quickly."
The purpose, of course, is to evidence our concern and see what we can do about taking care of the situation that everybody's so uptight about and fraught with danger.
Sir, who are you meeting with?
I'm not quite certain. It'll be Mayor Davis and Dr. Peoples and who else, I don't know, but we'll find out and we'll see you all later.
The Attorney General's job here will be to determine if the Jackson Police and the State Patrol violated any federal civil rights laws. In doing so, he will need to find out exactly what happened here last Thursday night. And unless federal investigators have turned up some new evidence, that may be difficult. Philip Gibbs, who was killed, and the 13 students who were wounded were hit by a volley of police gunfire over there in front of the girls' dormitory. The police were in the middle of the street. But James Earl Green, a high school student on his way home from work, was over here behind the police lines when he was shot and killed. It is believed the police are now saying Green was killed by sniper fire, not by the police, but so far the police are not talking publicly. Student eyewitnesses say there was no sniper. Black leaders and other observers here say even if there was a sniper, that was no excuse for firing directly into a crowd of students, some of whom were standing behind closed windows watching what was happening below. George Page, NBC News, Jackson, Mississippi.
The Black Panthers opened a national conference of black college students yesterday in New Haven. And they said that the difference in reaction of white students to the killings at Kent State University and in Augusta showed racist indifference on the part of the whites. The Portage County coroner said today that the four students killed at Kent State all died of wounds caused by what he called bullets similar to 30 caliber military ammunition. In Augusta, where six blacks were shot in the back and killed by police, the National Guard packed up and left, and a curfew was lifted. Welfare Secretary Finch was supposed to meet today with employees of his department. There has been a good deal of discontent among them, particularly on the Nixon administration's policy toward blacks. Finch was going to reassure them, but early in the afternoon he complained of numbness in his left arm and went to Walter Reed Hospital.
About 700 HEW employees crowded into the department auditorium for a meeting they'd requested with Secretary Finch. They wanted to tell him they don't think HEW is doing enough to promote civil rights. Finch agreed to meet to give his side and to answer questions. But Undersecretary John Veneman appeared instead and made this announcement.
HEW Secretary Robert H. Finch was admitted to the Walter Reed Hospital at 2:30 p.m. today for medical evaluation of a neurological involvement of the left arm. He developed weakness and numbness of the arm and hand at approximately 1:45 p.m. this afternoon. Further tests are in progress at this time. Present studies reveal no evidence of vascular involvement. The Secretary has asked that the meeting with employees, scheduled for today at 4 p.m., be rescheduled at the earliest possible time.
Some disappointed employees booed and hissed the announcement. Finch's associates refused to say any more about his condition until tests are completed. He will spend the night in the hospital. Veneman read a statement Finch intended to read, saying HEW is committed to enforcing civil rights laws aggressively. Ron Nesson, NBC News, Washington.
June 23rd, 1927. The modern age has arrived. The coffee grinder goes to the attic, and the fresh taste of home-ground coffee goes with it. And people do without home-ground coffee. Before long, home-ground taste is forgotten. But not forever. January 15th, 1969. Freeze-dried Sanka brand coffee is introduced. The beans are ground, then fresh-perked, and freeze-dried. Home-ground taste returns.
Is there anything more precious than a plump, juicy raisin? But do you know what's happening to these lovely little wonders? Post is locking up more and more of my little friends in every box of their raisin bran. A whole bowl full of them. Look, they were in one box. Well, they're not going to get you, my scrumptious pet. Oh!
Post, the more raisin bran.
The Huntley Brinkley Report continues, brought to you by Silver Thins. Cigarettes are like women. The best ones are thin and rich. Silver Thins are thin and rich.
Cigarettes are like women. The best ones are thin and rich. Silver Thins are thin and rich. Thin so they taste light. Lighter than other 100s. Lighter than most Kings. Rich, well, because rich is better. Cigarettes are like women. The best ones are thin and rich. Silver Thins are thin and rich.
The Supreme Court today upheld a lower court decision that women must be paid at the same rate as men doing the same work. The Wheaton Glass Company in New Jersey had appealed the decision after being ordered to raise the pay of 230 women. The Supreme Court also upheld a ruling that a plant in Maryland must close for violating the Clean Air Act of 1963. The owner of the plant, which makes animal feed from animal wastes, contended the government was imposing unreasonable time limitations in enforcing the law. Last fall, the Atomic Energy Commission set off a nuclear explosion 8,000 feet underground near Grand Junction, Colorado. The purpose was to trap a pocket of natural gas. Engineers are now drilling in the blast area to see what happened.
The Atomic Energy Commission hopes the nuclear blast produced an underground cavern of natural gas that can be marketed commercially. But some people around here are afraid of what might happen to their valley when the gas is released from the cavern. They filed suit to keep the cavern from being opened, and they lost. A judge said their fears that the health and safety of people and animals would be threatened by radioactive contamination just weren't justified. He allowed the drilling to begin, with the understanding that the AEC would keep everyone informed about its progress. It will be another month before the drill reaches the cavern, 8,000 feet down, but so far the monitoring devices haven't recorded any unusual radioactivity at any level. While drilling goes on, the AEC is conducting a public relations campaign. Area representatives are allowed to tour the site, then they are told radiation is nothing to worry about.
Our calculations, predictions, if you will, indicate that if there were some loss of control for a period of time at any of these points, there is just no way that an individual in the population could be exposed to more than a very small fraction of the permissible limits set by the FRC for exposure to the two isotopes that you've heard so much about, tritium and krypton.
The AEC says it can control any situation which might develop when the gas begins coming out of this chimney in late June. But some people in Colorado still aren't convinced. Don Oliver, NBC News, reporting.
Neil Armstrong, the first man to walk on the moon, will be desk-bound from now on. Officials said today he is dropping out of the astronaut program to become head of the space agency's aeronautics program in Washington.
Some happy birthday.
More like happy wet diapers.
Wet diapers? That's no problem. Here. Pampers?
Sure, Pampers keep Jimmy drier.
Drier than diapers? How?
Here's how. Moisture goes through Pampers' stay-dry lining and is trapped below, away from baby. So baby stays drier, inside and out.
Well, a little older, a little wiser.
Pampers. For drier, happier babies.
In the morning, I brush my teeth with the fluoride. For Mother. At night, I brush with a whitener. For Mary Jane.
Try new Gleam 2 with green sparkles. It's got fluoride and brighteners.
My class used fluoride toothpaste instead of a whitener and got 32% fewer boyfriends.
New Gleam 2 with green sparkles. It helps prevent cavities as well as the leading fluoride. Brightens teeth as well as the leading whitener. It's like two toothpastes in one.
British Prime Minister Wilson today called for a general election on June 18th. Recent polls have shown the Labour Party likely to win. Israeli jets today attacked Iraqi and Arab guerrilla positions in Jordan for more than 3 hours. Iraq said four Israeli jets were shot down. Israel also sent its jets against military sites in Egypt. Communist China canceled talks with the United States today and scheduled for Wednesday in Warsaw. It said it was protesting American fighting in Cambodia. Italian workers began walking off the job today in the second week of protests for reforms in government. Almost 2 million government workers are expected to join the strike at midnight. Trading was light on the New York Stock Exchange. The Dow Jones Industrials gained a fraction of a point, and the price of an average share went up 2 cents. On the American Exchange, an average share went up 3 cents. Last year, the Alaska state government sold oil rights in the Prudhoe Bay area for almost $1 billion. The oil companies which bought the rights want to build a pipeline more than 500 miles long to take oil south to Valdez, Alaska. Conservationists oppose the pipeline. In Valdez, people are hoping for a boom.
If the pipeline is built, when the pipeline is built, it will come down bringing oil from the north slope of Alaska down over the mountains to here, to the tiny town of Valdez, Alaska. Valdez will be a modern-day boom town. Valdez has been many things in the past, like destroyed.
It was 6 years ago, Good Friday, the Alaskan earthquake grabbed this town and shook it out. Today, everything is still here as the earthquake and the people left it. The buildings were bent, the town was undermined, so the people evacuated Valdez. 6 years ago. Now the town stands empty, hunched over its memories. Memories of old Valdez, a town in which a young boy who grew up there recalls now there wasn't very much to do.
The big thing in town was
the dog fights outside the bar. And if they had an argument, they could step outside, and the kid would all sit on top of the pins on, throw snowballs at him. That was a big thing in town.
But that was the old Valdez. This is the new. 2 miles away, the people of Valdez, with pluck and low-interest government loans, have completely rebuilt the town. It's still a quiet place. There's no radio, no television. Newspapers come 2 days late. It's awfully isolated. But the spring thaw is coming now. Valdez is opening up. This year, like it's never opened up before. 200 miles of Japanese pipe are stacked in a field outside Valdez. When it is put together, it will bring oil to Valdez, ships and people to Valdez, industry to Valdez, progress to Valdez. That's how Valdez has it figured, that it's going to be a boom town. Trouble is, the pipeline project is tied up in court. The boom is delayed. And the people of Valdez, after waiting a year, are getting nervous.
Yes, we are very eager to get it. But don't forget, we've had this idea planted down here for 2 years. They told us the pipeline is coming into Valdez. So you sit and you wait. And for 2 years, that's bound to wear on your nerves.
Business-wise, why, next winter will probably be pretty tough if we don't get the pipeline in here. I don't know, maybe everybody will be going through bankruptcy or something else.
People have put money into new motels and clubs and things to take advantage of the boom, when and if. The town itself has tripled its police force from 1 to 3 men. They arrest fighting drunks now, so there's no one for a boy to throw snowballs at on a Saturday night anymore. Valdez wants a clean boom. That is, it wants a boom, but as an old-timer says, it doesn't want any undesirables.
There's going to be a lot of floating population come in, and what those people amount to is just what we more or less make them. I mean, if we can get rid of the undesirables as fast as we can get them in, we can keep the desirables here.
How do you get rid of the undesirables?
That's the question.
Good night for NBC News.